Bukele's a Leo. He also has a lot of planets in Leo. Like, he has a very Leo energy. You can have like just your sun and a sign, but then there's all the other planets, right? And so you kind of have to look at everything together to get like an overall picture of someone. But he actually has like quite a similar chart in a lot of ways to Trump. So Trump is a Gemini sun, Leo rising. Bukele is a Leo sun, Gemini rising. So they are inverted. But then also Bukele has this like very prominent Venus placement, which Venus is like, it's kind of the money planet. It's value. So it's like, how do you assess value? How do you decide something is beautiful or valuable or whatever? It's like money through that perspective of like assigning value to something. He has his Venus right on Trump's rising. They have this like synastry basically between them at Leo. And Leo is like Leo is the king. That's like the astrological. It's the lion. It's like the king of the jungle. Leo is the leader. Leo is, yeah, it's the biggest problem with Leos is that they have like crazy egos. Like, they have to like learn how to be magnanimous and like give to other people as much as they receive from other people. But in general, like in the United States, like Barack Obama is a Leo. Bill Clinton is a Leo. Trump is a Leo rising. George W. Bush was a Leo rising as well. Like, it's pretty consistent. You get Leo like leaders in general. So they have, you know, he likes Trump's persona basically. But not only that, oh my gosh, I'm going to get so technical here, but it's on fixed star Regulus. Fixed star Regulus is a star in the Leo constellation. And it's Regulus is like the lion in Greek mythology. And so that star specifically, like it makes like a super Leo basically. Like, it's not just a Leo, it's like a Leo who also has the almost Greek tragedy that is like the king archetype, where, you know, you can get all the power in the world, you may become the most powerful person, but there's like a backstabbing betrayal vibe where it's like the people that are supposed to love you hate you, or like you are betrayed by people around you. And so like Bukele also has this placement. I'm just curious, kind of like, I don't know actually, what is like the like opinion of Bukele in El Salvador?
Hello guys, welcome once again to BitCorner Podcast. All right, so I hope that you have enjoyed our last episode. We have been introducing a little bit of Nostr. We're going to talk more about Nostr, but this is a Bitcoin podcast and we're going to talk even more about Bitcoin. We're doing some kind of experiments in the topics that we're talking. I hope that you're enjoying it. But right now, I think every single aspect of Bitcoin has different rabbit hole depending on who is the was the guest, as you can tell. So this season, as you can see, has been special because there have been plenty of figures, since politicians to microeconomists to developers, etc. And we will continue doing that. So today we're going to continue talking about Bitcoin, but in a different way that you'll find out. So, but I don't want to say anymore because this will be a fun episode. I just want to welcome Erin Redwin, that she's also the host of Hell Money Podcast. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Wow, one host having a podcast with another host. This will be interesting.
Yeah, have you had any other podcasters on your podcast before, or is this the first time?
I feel like
Bitcoin, everyone has a podcast.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, no, but yeah, I had one with Coach Carbon. Have you know him? He's from the UK.
I don't think so. I don't think I know him. Well, I'll have to add him to my Bitcoin podcast.
He's very focused on health and workout and everything.
Oh, cool.
Actually, we made a, how do you say it when it's like a, we both recorded, but we both posted
nice,
in our own
nice.
Style.
That's great. Yeah. I don't know if there's a word for that, but yes, like I can imagine collaboration, yeah. You know?
Let's say that. And the other one was, Dan Prince.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know him?
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. Third podcaster or something like that. Although maybe there's guests you've had that you don't even know they have a podcast, you know?
Could be. Or probably now they're having a podcast. Exactly. Yeah. It'll be fun. Yeah. Do you know that we podcaster have this bad thing that we talk a lot?
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's a good excuse to talk to anyone. I think that's the nice thing about having a podcast is like you want to meet someone, you want to talk to someone. You invite them on your podcast, and then that's an excuse to talk to them. So it's really the perfect in with people, honestly.
Yeah, I want to ask you about your podcast, but you know that in mine actually was when I started, I think, right away when we made Bitcoin legal tender. I know, guys, that now it's not legal tender anymore. We'll discuss about that when it comes. And for me, it was the perfect excuse because there was, and still are, a lot of projects in El Salvador about Bitcoin, blah, blah, blah. But there wasn't a Salvadorian Bitcoin podcast. And I was like, all right. And my friends always told me, like, you talk a lot about Bitcoin. You should make a podcast. And I did. I was like, all right, I think the perfect way to learn more about Bitcoin and to meet people is having a podcast. So why not? So absolutely. That's what I did.
I had a similar
look. What about you? Really?
Yeah. I mean, so for me, it was, I guess, what year was it that El Salvador made Bitcoin legal tender? Like, when was 21. That?
September. Okay. They proposed a law in July, I think.
Okay, I got into Bitcoin like end of 2020, because that's what I remember being. I remember like Nayib Bukele being like a big figure and that being a big news story whenever I was first getting into Bitcoin. But I basically spent a year. So I got into Bitcoin through astrology, which is probably the majority of what I guess we'll talk about today. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
I got into Bitcoin through astrology, which I think is a pretty. I would love to know if there's someone else who's gotten into Bitcoin from astrology. Like, please, I'd love to meet you. But
you're the first one that I met, actually.
I think so. I'm the first one that, I've talked to. So it's kind of a weird way to get into Bitcoin. But kind of as a result, I really didn't have any friends that were into it. Like, I tried to get some of my astrology friends into it and kind of, you know, they were interested a little bit. But, you know, you have to have like interest either in like the tech or like macroeconomics or geopolitics or something. You know, there has to be something to kind of, I think, get you to really like get orange pilled and really, really go down the rabbit hole for Bitcoin. And for me, like, I had enough of that I was able to kind of get into it, not just from the astrology angle, but just also get into Bitcoin more broadly. But I basically spent a year very lonely, like talking off about Bitcoin to anyone who would listen. And everyone was just like, okay, like,
I feel you,
you know? And so I finally, like, after a year of that, I went to a Bitcoin meetup and started making Bitcoin friends. And then,
where was your first meetup?
It was in the Bay Area, California, which is where I live, which has a great meetup scene. I mean, there's a lot of really good Bitcoin meetups. I don't know about all around the world, but certainly all around the United States, they're everywhere. And that was like a huge way out for me from my fiat life, just generally speaking, you know, like, I found it really hard to connect with people before meeting Bitcoiners. And I just love that Bitcoiners have such, I don't know, they have such strong opinions, but very open minds. And it's just, it just really was like, I've made the best friends that I've had through Bitcoin. And one of those people was my podcast co-host, Casey Rodemore. When we met, it was just like really great chemistry. And I mean, he's, I think, in my opinion, one of the people who knows Bitcoin technically the best of anyone that I've ever talked to. He's a dev and has very much like that perspective on Bitcoin. And so I was learning a lot about Bitcoin from that angle from him. And then I just kind of was like, oh my gosh, we should record these conversations. You know, like, I think I know how to ask questions and you know how to answer them. Like, it was shocking to me that he didn't already have a podcast in a way. And so that was
because he talks too much as well.
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh. And he's like, you know, if I had the problem of not being able to talk about anything but Bitcoin, like, he had that times 10, you know, like, it was really like, wow. Okay. This guy has just been living, breathing, obsessing over Bitcoin for years, you know? And so the beginning of our podcast, we started it in May, 2022. Was really like just Bitcoin education. Like, we did an episode about the Lightning Network. We did an episode about the white paper, you know, just going through like kind of like a beginner, which was me, and then like an expert, which was him, and kind of trying to break down these topics. And now it's gone in like crazy directions. And during that time, he also like created Ordinals. So then it kind of went off in like a crazy direction for that as well. But yeah, it's just been like a really wild journey for me where, you know, I kind of felt like there weren't a ton of people from my perspective that had Bitcoin podcasts. I mean, maybe every Bitcoin podcaster feels that way. They've got their own unique perspective, and maybe we all do. But for me, it was like, you know, I came in from a weird angle. I also felt like it's, you know, not a stereotype, but it's like a feminine angle, right? Like, being into astrology and kind of seeing Bitcoin through that lens. And so I also felt like that was a perspective that wasn't super present. And so, yeah, it was kind of like I wanted to make Bitcoin content that I wanted to consume. And yeah, we've been doing the podcast for, I guess, like 3 years now, which is crazy.
That's so cool. And what do you put in hell money?
Hell money is it's a form of Chinese ancestor worship. So sometimes you'll see, if you go into like in the US, you can go into like little witchy stores. But in China, it's like a much more ubiquitous thing where it'll be this like paper money. that will say something like Bank of Hell. Like literally it'll say something like that. And it's just like, and then it's paper money, and then you burn it, and it's supposed to basically go to your ancestors that are in the afterlife. And it's like an offering to them, or it's like, you know, they can go buy their weekly groceries or whatever with the hell money that you've burned for them. And so we kind
that's cool.
When we were looking for a name, like that sort of struck, because I have this like sort of, you know, esoteric kind of like witchy sort of astrology girl side. And also it's the eternal question, like, what is hell money? Is it fiat or is it Bitcoin? You know, like, is Bitcoin like the rock and roll like hell money? Yeah. Or like, I don't know, if we're burning paper money, that kind of seems like hell money is maybe fiat.
I'm pretty sure that my best friend is gonna watch this episode, and my hope is if you're watching this that you get orange peel with this episode, because she's good, just like good. You. Yeah, it's so awesome. You also are an astronomist, right?
Yeah, so when I got into Bitcoin, I was working as I was a PhD student in planetary science and astronomy. Uh-huh. And I was kind of like living a double life, because I was really into astrology while working in astronomy. And generally speaking, astronomers are not super friendly to astrologers.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I don't know. For me, it's weird. I wish I had like a better story for why astrology just sort of stuck in my brain. It was just one of those things where I don't know if it was just like people maybe thought when I said, oh, I'm an astronomer, they'd be like, oh, I'm a Gemini, you know, or like whatever. But I just would hear about it over time. I always liked it. Like, I never had a bad feeling about it. I never like thought like, oh, that's terrible or anything like that. Like, just generally speaking, I'm not that type of person. And so I didn't have like an antagonism towards it in a way that I think a lot of astronomers do. And so I was always kind of open to it. And then I really think it was just kind of learning that astrology is just taking a map of the solar system at the time that you're born. Like, that's your natal chart. That's, you know, when I say like I'm a Leo, that's because when I was born at my birth time, the sun was in Leo, but then the moon was somewhere else and Jupiter was somewhere else. And that whole map basically makes up a natal chart, which is what astrologers look at to then get all their interpretations from. When I kind of realized that was the underpinning of astrology, I was like, oh, that's like what I do for my job. Like, I was in my PhD program, which I dropped out of, by the way. So like, don't give me for being like a real, I dropped out to like work in Bitcoin full time. So I'd never really got like the full like astronomer doctor title. But when I was working in my PhD, I was doing telescope observations of planetary objects, like, you know, Jupiter, of Saturn, whatever.
That's so
and
cool.
So I was often thinking about what the solar system looked like from the perspective of Earth, which is like, when you think about a model of the solar system, right? Like, it's the sun's at the center, you know, this was the whole controversy around the Enlightenment and the Catholic Church and all that.
Yeah.
The sun's at the center. You don't usually think about the solar system from the perspective of Earth, but if you're working on telescopes, you have to, you know, cause you have to know where the different things are in the sky based on the telescope that's right where you are on Earth. And astrology, since it's like ancient, and it was before pre-Enlightenment, it also thinks about Earth as being the center of the solar system. So it also draws up all the data from the perspective of Earth. So it was like something where I just had the right expertise to be able to just understand like, oh, this is what astrology is. And maybe that sounds like unrelated, but I think, you know, when people think like, oh, like, I don't know, my moon's in Capricorn, like, what does that mean? I don't know. It's like, for me, I could physically understand what that meant. Like, oh, Capricorn is a constellation in the sky. It's a constellation that's on the ecliptic, which is the plane upon which all planets orbit. So it's just saying, oh, the moon is over there, which is what I would have to do anyway if I was taking telescope observations and I needed to look at something. So it was something that just clicked for me once I understood what astrology was. And then there was like a 5-year period where I was like living a double life, like working in astronomy, but like getting more and more obsessed with astrology and not really knowing like when those worlds would ever meet or if I should keep it private. You know, it just was this kind of just difficult sort of thing to balance. And I actually think that was a big reason why it was easy for me to get into Bitcoin, because I was already used to having opinions and thoughts and beliefs that were antagonistic to the system in which I was working and living in at the time. So, you know, those astronomy and astrology are unrelated in a lot of ways, but for me, there was just this like part of the, I guess, like the expertise required for both that I already had from astronomy that just made it easy for me to get into astrology. And then what got me into Bitcoin, since astrology is what got me into Bitcoin.
I was going to ask you that. Yeah, how do you got into
the long journey of my weird special interests?
The special rabbit hole.
Yes, exactly. Just going further, deeper down the rabbit hole. That's how it's felt to me, honestly.
Damn.
There was an astrological conjunction at the end of 2020 that was like very important to astrologers. It was Saturn and Jupiter. End of 2020. Yeah, it was like summer, or it was a winter solstice. So December 1st, 2020. There was a conjunction of Saturn and Jupiter at the first degree of Aquarius, which, you know, if you're familiar at all with like the hippies and the new agey types, they're always talking about the age of Aquarius. We're entering the age of Aquarius. Like,
remind me later to tell you my birthday.
Okay, yeah. Sounds good. We can get into it. Yeah, so you know, we're entering the age of Aquarius, and so there was this big, like, you know, Saturn and Jupiter, they're these two gas giants that were meeting up at the first degree of Aquarius. So it was kind of this moment. You know, 2020 was a difficult year, right? It was a lot of things ending, a lot of things clearing out, a lot of realizations that things don't work, that things have to change, you know? And so as an astrologer, I was kind of looking to this conjunction as like a moment of clarity, you know, of like, okay, well, what's coming in? You know, if all this stuff is ending and not working and whatever, okay, we have this one moment where there's all this kind of new energy available to us, like, what should I notice on this day? And I had the Robinhood app downloaded on my phone because I just owned a couple stocks and stuff like that. You know, I was a little bit into personal finance already. And I think I probably owned like $10 worth of Bitcoin on Robinhood just because like you could buy it. And as a result, I had the Bitcoin price on like a widget on my homepage, you know, where like I could see like, oh, Bitcoin price, cool, whatever. And so that day I was just noticing, you know, I was just kind of like being like, let me take in what's going on and try to perceive like what's this new energy coming in. And I looked at my phone and I was like, oh my gosh, Bitcoin is back up to its all-time high of 18K like today, which, you know, that was the beginning of the 2021 bull run was Bitcoin kind of coming back up. And so I was like, that's kind of interesting. Like, maybe I'll write that down. And when I get home, I'll go look into this and see, like, maybe that's related. And then when I looked into Bitcoin, you know, the themes of Aquarius, which is like, this is the age that we're entering into, this is the big picture, like astrology context, is decentralization, being an individual in a collective. So not dissolving into the collective, not losing yourself in the collective, but being an individual amongst other individuals who have their own incentives and their own identities and learning how to work together, and future forward kind of technology kind of optimism. That's what Aquarius is as an energy. And so learning about Bitcoin, I was like, oh, this is like it, right? Like this is a big part of what's coming up. And Bitcoin also has a specific natal chart because we have the Genesis block, which was mined on January 3rd, 2009 at 6:15 UTC. So we have that exact time of birth that like astrologers want, you know?
Exact time,
right? And we don't usually get exact times for stuff. You know, if I want to do the astrology of a country or a company or whatever, it's like, you don't have that exact time for a lot of things. And so, so the data was great, like from an astrological perspective, and it just fit the themes so perfectly for what I was looking for at that time. And so I basically just went down the rabbit hole and never came out. And yeah, still basically now I'm a Bitcoin astrologer like 5 years later. So,
oh my God.
You know, it's a mind virus.
Yeah. So guys, context, I don't know much about this. I know much as you do, but we'll try to figure out some things.
Very technical, you know. Astrology is a very technical field.
But you know, probably I'll tell you before we started the podcast. But my best friend gets a lot of this, but I don't know why. I have several friends that know about this, so probably all my knowledge, all what I know about this, is because of them. But I don't know much, but we're here to learn, guys. And actually, I read somewhere in your profile, because I was checking so fast, that you also relate that with cycles, with Bitcoin cycles, well, economic cycles, actually, right? Like, so how you can relate those things?
Yeah, so, you know, most people, their familiarity with astrology is things like their sun sign, you know, horoscopes, that sort of stuff. Or maybe they know about like Mercury retrograde, you know, they're like, oh, Mercury, which actually Mercury goes retrograde today. So just FYI, that's the next 3 weeks or whatever. But you know, people maybe know those kind of like what I would call pop astrology stuff.
That's when people say that they feel like low in energy.
Yeah, Mercury retrograde is a time where like communication is fractured and like, you know, you can have missed calls and travel delays. And it's just like it's just a time where things are more difficult than usual. So it's like you kind of have to slow down and just not expect for things to like, you know, go super fast and go perfectly every time. You just kind of need to let things.
So my daily no, just kidding.
Yeah. We'll see. Hopefully this recording isn't, you know, messed up. Like that's kind of classic Mercury retrograde stuff. Is like
no,
things
that
get in the way. Maybe you have natal Mercury retrograde. That's possible. Like Mercury could have been retrograde when you were born. But anyway, so a lot of people know about like, you know, just sun sign, horoscopes, that kind of stuff as it relates to astrology. But what I'm interested in astrology is outer planet astrology. So the outer planets are the gas giants that are at the far end of our solar system. So Jupiter, yeah, Saturn, sure. Neptune, Uranus, Pluto's the not a gas ones. Giant, but it's also far out. Yeah. And the reason why I'm interested in those planets is because they have longer cycles. So when we look at like a sun cycle, which is like, you know, your birthday, you're a Leo or an Aquarius or whatever, that's a 1 year cycle, right? It takes the Earth 1 year to go around the sun. And so we have 1 year of astrological cycle, which is the solar cycle. Mercury is very close to the sun as well. And so it's a 1 year cycle. But the further out you get, the longer cycles you get because they're further from the sun. And so they move slower relative to where we are on Earth. So for example, Jupiter has a 12-year cycle. Saturn has a 28-year cycle. Neptune is 165 years, Pluto is 250 years. So we get very long cycles once we get out further. And so for me, I like, you know, the social aspects of astrology, but I'm really more interested in the societal and civilizational stuff. You know, looking at the astrology of the United States of America, for example, you know, and looking mm-hmm. at like the transits that the country is going through and trying to understand politics or predict what will happen in elections or stuff like that based on astrological transits. And so once you reach that scale where you're looking at something like the United States, it's more helpful to look at the planets that are further out because, for example, the United States currently just finished its Pluto return, which is the first time that Pluto makes it the whole way around the zodiac wheel because the United States was started in 1776.
Okay.
Now in like 2025, right? So it's like you've probably seen the America 250 stuff that like everyone's gearing up for, right? Like we're going into like the 250th anniversary, birthday, whatever, of the United States. So we're going through that right now. So from an astrological perspective, I can kind of look at like, okay, well, you know, let's look at the Roman Empire, right? What happened when we went through the Pluto return of the Roman Empire? They survived their first Pluto return. It was a very difficult time, but the Roman Empire collapsed under its second Pluto return. And if you look at like economists love to look at cycles as well. The 250 year cycle is something that Ray Dalio, who's like a pretty popular economist, likes to call the empire rise and decline cycle, where, you know, you look at something like the British Empire or the American Empire or the Dutch Empire, and he thinks now China is like the new empire. He basically tracks their rise and fall on a 250 year cycle. And he doesn't really have a reason for this. He's like, oh, this is just what happens. You know, maybe you build stuff up and then it declines or whatever. I would call it the Pluto return cycle because Pluto is the ruler of the underworld that like once Pluto comes back around, it asks like, are you deserving of your power? If not, it will be taken from you. Like, that's Pluto's sort of realm to deal with. And so, you know, like this is stuff that doesn't apply for a human being, right? Like there's no human being that's lived 250 years, but there are entities or kind of civilization level structures that have. So that's what most like economic astrology looks at. There's some people who do like trading, which is more day to day kind of like, oh, well, you know, Mercury is retrograde right now, so maybe it's not a good day to trade, you know, that kind of stuff. But I'm not super into that. Like, I just kind of find it boring. I think it's more interesting to look at like, I don't know, just big picture stuff in general. And so for example, Bitcoin is like, what, 15 years old, something like that. When Bitcoin started, we were at the kind of like peak of the Saturn Uranus cycle, which is just, if you look at the cycle of Saturn and Uranus together, you get a 45 year cycle. And that cycle began at the end of the Cold War. And it ends again in 2032. And so the peak was in 2008, 2009.
Okay.
And I talked about this. I've talked about it on my podcast. I talked about it on the show that I did with Danny Knowles, the What Bitcoin Did episode, which I think is how like uh-huh. we got connected. But But basically that cycle is about like rebellion versus the structures that be. It's like the outsider that says, no, it shouldn't be this way. These people are not deserving of power. And the institutions that say, well, we are in power and we don't want the outsider and we're going to fight the outsider. So like Bitcoin emerged at like the peak of a cycle like that. And so that's kind of the context in which I look at like everything that's happening in general. You know, I look at like a US presidential election through that perspective of, okay, well, we're going through a Pluto return where Pluto says, hey, have you guys been doing the work to be deserving of being the global empire? And it's like, has the US been doing that? You know, like it's maybe that will dictate how things go, you know, and what kind of president we end up electing. So that's kind of the thing that I like to look at. And so, yeah, in general, I would say I was predisposed to kind of be into something like Bitcoin because I was already doing astrology from this perspective of like long-term planetary cycles and trying to see how they track to economic, political, civilizational level kind of things.
Have you read the Lars Lippard book?
No. Who is that? I've never heard of them.
Cuando dejas tus activos digitales en un exchange o en custodia de alguien más, te expones a riesgos de terceros no deseados. A diferencia del sistema bancario tradicional, Bitcoin te permite tomar el control total de tus fondos utilizando tus propias claves privadas. Esto te permite ser soberano y esencialmente tu propio banco. Al tomar el control de tus Bitcoin, puedes evitar riesgos innecesarios de terceros. Almacenar tus Bitcoin en custodia de terceros como los exchanges puede exponerte a ataques de actores malintencionados, gobiernos o estafadores que lo único que quieren es apoderarse de tu dinero. Las billeteras de hardware aumentan la seguridad de tu billetera porque tus claves privadas se almacenan en un dispositivo especializado que no está siempre conectado al internet. Como te he dicho antes, mantener tus claves almacenadas en un dispositivo en línea puede exponerte a factores adicionales de ataque, por lo que se recomienda usar una billetera de hardware al almacenar grandes cantidades de Bitcoin durante largos periodos de tiempo. Jade es una billetera de hardware no custodial para Bitcoins y Liquid que ofrece opciones de firma simple y firmas múltiples. Yo personalmente lo utilizo para almacenar mis Bitcoins, ya que me siento mucho más seguro manteniendo mis Bitcoins en una billetera fría que en una almacenada, por ejemplo, en mi teléfono. Si estás pensando en adquirir uno para ti, no olvides utilizar el código de descuento de nuestro show, BitCorner Podcast. De esta forma estarás apoyando directamente el show y además obtendrás un 10% de descuento para la compra de tu billetera fría. So Lars Lippard, he's the author of The Big Print. He's actually a microeconomist, but he's into Austrian economics. He's actually a gold bug. So he, I think his family had a company based on gold. Basically, he has clients that invest in gold. Now he's full on Bitcoins. And he wrote this book because his book is called The Big Print, because he has made a book where he talks about all the American history, all the cycles, but also, for example, he explained the crisis of the 2008, then the COVID. So he explained everything, why it happened and related to the US history and why that happened. And it's all because of inflation. So it's really interesting. I suggest you to read it because it will be interesting. The reason that I'm asking you, because it will be interesting that if you know, or probably you know, but the greatness of this book is that he explained it so everyone, even if they're not Americans or have been living in the US or know anything about US history, you will learn about that. So I have learned a lot actually from that book. And it will be interesting that you compare those things with also with the cycles, because probably you will find out more of those things.
Oh yeah, for sure. No, that's my favorite thing about like reading economic stuff is I'm like, oh yeah, okay, that transit happened then. Like, you know, it's like it's different ways of kind of looking at the same data. And that's why I often say like astrology is, you know, for girls and economics is for boys. It's like the same kind of like trying to apply cycles and like look for themes and patterns and predict the future with it. But like for some reason girls like astrology and boys like doing it with like macroeconomics.
Absolutely.
That's cool. Something that I mean, this is a non-astrology take, but I think something that's very compelling about Bitcoin in general is like when you understand Bitcoin, or maybe when you understand fiat is like the better way of saying it. When you understand fiat, a lot of things make a lot more sense. You know, like you look at something like COVID differently because you just see it through this perspective of printing money and inflation. And I think like something that's very, I don't know, like I noticed that there's a bit of a spiritual reverence that a lot of people have for Bitcoin. Like people that get into Bitcoin, they almost like worship Bitcoin. And there's a lot of people who'd say like, no, I don't, I worship God. Da, da. But you know, the way they act about it is like, you know, they're kind of like forming their life around Bitcoin. They're forming their morality around Bitcoin. And I do think that that's something that, you know, I would consider astrology to be a spiritual practice. I don't think it's like a science, or, you know, I wouldn't put it in that kind of category. I think it's like a belief system and a spiritual practice. And I do think that there's some aspect of Bitcoin where the transition that we're going through from the age of Pisces was the age that we were previously in, and we're now entering the age of Aquarius. The age of Pisces was the last 2000 years. So year zero to year 2000, approximately. And that was, in my opinion, like the birth of, it started with the birth of Jesus Christ. And that was like the age of monotheism, where we had like all of these monotheistic religions that were kind of dominating the way that we lived our lives, the way that we organized our governments. You know, that was like the structure that we organized ourselves around, or what we thought happened after we die, or how we live, or how we, like literally our governments, you know, we're still beholden to the church. And now what we're seeing is this like disillusionment, you know, where now I wouldn't say governments are really beholden to the church in the same way that they used to. There's still remnants of that, but we're definitely seeing in general a disillusionment happen from the monotheistic religions that used to be such a big part of people's individual lives and the way that we lived in our society, to now, I think with the age of Aquarius, I don't think spirituality is going away. I think belief in spirituality is like an innate part of being human, but I think it's transforming, and we're learning how to do it from a more individual level, where rather than having to like go to a church and ask the priest, what should I think, or how do I understand this? Like, you have the ability to figure that out for yourself, whether it's like you can read whatever you want to read, you know, you can look up and research whatever you want to look up, or you just have that inside of you, you know, however you want to think about it. But it's like we're having our own individual recreation of like morality or spirituality. And I feel like that's something that I see with Bitcoiners. And part of what I think makes Bitcoin such like an Age of Aquarius kind of idea is, it's not just a technology around money and value. It also like reassesses your whole value system, you know, like it makes you change, and it makes you kind of want to live in a different way. And I feel like that's also part of the transition that we're going through, is like we're getting disillusioned with the structures of religion, also the structures of government, you know, also the structures of banks, all these structures. Yeah. And something new is emerging. And I think like Bitcoin is basically one of those structures that will emerge and that people will have faith in, the same way that they had faith in the Catholic Church in the previous era. And that doesn't mean I think Bitcoin's the Pope or Bitcoin's Jesus. You know, it's not like a one-to-one thing like that. But I just think like there is some spiritual aspect to Bitcoin that just seems very obvious to me whenever you interact with Bitcoiners. They all sort Absolutely. Of are obsessed with Bitcoin from that perspective.
Yeah, so it's really interesting, because in the end, concluding the topic with Lawrence Lepper in his book, actually he explained all the cycles as well, but the monetary cycles, because he concluded that eventually we will go to sound money principles, you know. And he says that we're actually starting that, and probably there will be like a one last big event that is the big print, that probably will be in 2030 or something like that, or we are already here. So, but in the end, we will go back to what we used to have before, you know, what Nixon did in 1931. Yeah.
I wonder what his year prediction is for when the big print will happen. Because my astrological prediction for Bitcoin is, I think like 2032 is a really big like finale moment, where it's like we figure out, did Bitcoin win or not? That's like the end of the cycle I was talking about earlier, that started at the end of the Cold War. That cycle ends in 2032. And so, and that was the one that peaked in 2008. I look at that date as like, you know, not necessarily like, oh, it's going to be a big battle between Bitcoin and the governments or the IMF, yeah, or whatever, but more like by 2032, we will know, like, did Bitcoin win? Did it succeed in what it was trying to do or not? So I wonder what his date is for like the big print, because I feel like that'd probably be relevant to.
If I remember right, when he was in the podcast, he didn't have like a specific date, because what I can recall is that he told me that it's going to happen soon, but he didn't conclude, because he thinks that because every day is changing. So, but we're the only thing that is certain is that we're going that way because it's nonstop. I mean, the dev is gone. It's you can.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's no reason. I mean, Bitcoin works because of its incentives, right? And there's no incentive for governments to rein in their printing. Like the printing is part of what gives them their power. And it's almost like bipartisan in the US, at least, to print money. You know, like there's no reason to be responsible from that perspective. You know, there's no incentive. And especially because the general population has no idea what money is or how money works or why, you know, a house that's in terrible condition costs over $1 million in any city in the United States. Like they don't understand why that's happening, and they blame other things, you know, and they're distracted by other things. It's like there's really no reason for the government to stop using this exorbitant privilege that it has to print money to pump its own bags, basically. So I definitely think like that's again part of like I think the inevitability of Bitcoin when you get into it. It's just like, yeah, there's no, you know, part of Bitcoin's success, I think, relies on the failure of the previous system. It is still superior technology regardless, right? Like it's definitely just the peer-to-peer exchange of money is something that's great. Like there's a lot of properties of Bitcoin just from the technological aspect, or even, you know, from like the economic aspect that make it superior to using dollars. I think the sort of rapid success of something like Bitcoin or Bitcoin versus, you know, the US government, for example, coming out with its own CBDC blockchain kind of thing. I think it's the irresponsibility of the institutions and the ultimate like collapse of their power that I think fuels Bitcoin's success. And so it's like, if you think about it from that perspective, like there's no reason and there's no sign that the institutions are becoming more responsible or that they're going to fix the problem. Like they won't, you know? So it's, yeah, the inevitability of Bitcoin becomes obvious, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a question for you because I told you that I was listening to the podcast you made with Danny, and you talk about Donald Trump, but I don't want to talk about Donald Trump. I want to talk about Bukele. Have you searched something about him just by curiosity?
No, I haven't looked at his chart. That's a great question, actually. I don't even know what his...
Do you want to do it?
Now I'm like, yeah, let me see. I can very easily...
I know when his birthday is
right. It's very... Honestly, the astrologers are on it. They've got great data. Okay, so he's a...
Really?
Love that. Yeah. Oh my gosh, you can get charts for anyone. Like, it's a birth certificate data. So there's enough astrologers that have gone and pulled birth certificate data that they can figure it out. Okay, interesting. Yeah, he's a Leo sun. Love that. I'm also a Leo sun. Are you an Aquarius? I assumed that based on your sort of cheeky like, oh.
There, you're so good. You're super good. Guys, I'm sorry I haven't said that before to her. She doesn't even know my birthday, but I will tell her. But yeah. Interesting.
You gave it away a little bit, so it's not really all my, you know, but okay, interesting. Yeah, so I'm looking at Bukele's chart right now. So he's a Leo.
Yeah,
that for him. He's got North.
Be brutally honest, please.
Yeah, no. It's, yeah, he's, okay, so he has like a very similar, there's a placement in Donald, I mean, not, you said that I don't want to talk about Donald Trump, but I have to bring him up.
Go ahead.
Bukele's a Leo. He also has a lot of planets in Leo. Like he has a very Leo energy. You can have like just your sun and a sign, but then there's all the other planets, right? And so you kind of have to look at everything together to get like an overall picture of someone.
Oh, all right.
But he actually has like quite a similar chart in a lot of ways to Trump. So Trump is a...
Then go ahead.
Yeah. Trump is a Gemini sun, Leo rising. Bukele is a Leo sun, Gemini rising. So they are inverted. But then also,
oh, really?
Bukele has this like very prominent Venus placement, which Venus is like, it's kind of the money planet. It's value. So it's like, how do you assess value? How do you decide something is beautiful or valuable or whatever? It's like money through that perspective of like assigning value to something. He has his Venus right on Trump's rising. Like they have this like synastry basically between them at Leo. And Leo is like Leo is the king. That's like the astral. Okay. It's the lion. It's like the king of the jungle. Leo is the leader. Leo is, yeah, it's the biggest problem with Leos is that they have like crazy egos. Like they have to like learn how to be magnanimous and like give to other people as much as they receive from other people. But in general, Like in the United States, like Barack Obama is a Leo, Bill Clinton is a Leo, Trump is a Leo rising, George W. Bush was a Leo rising as well. Like it's pretty consistent. You get Leo leaders in general. So Bukele is Leo, has a lot of Leo placements. And then he also has his Venus, which is like that's how he assigns value. That's how he decides what's valuable, right on Trump's ascendant. So they have, you know, he likes Trump's persona, basically. But not only that, oh my gosh, I'm going to get so technical here, but it's on fixed star.
No, go ahead. What is that?
Fixed star Regulus is a star in the Leo constellation. And it's Regulus is like the lion in Greek mythology. And so that star specifically, like it makes like a super Leo, basically. Like it's not just a Leo. It's like a Leo who also has the almost Greek tragedy that is like the king archetype where, you know, you can get all the power in the world. You can get everything you want. You can be, you know, the most powerful, famous, whatever person. But there's like a betrayal aspect, like the Regulus character in Greek mythology is like betrayed in the end. And like there's a tragic aspect to it as well, where it's like, you know, I think with Trump, and I don't know, actually, like, I'm not really sure, like, what do like El Salvadorians think of Bukele? Like, I kind of know what Bitcoiners think about him, whatever. But with Trump, there's this aspect of like, he's beloved and also fiercely hated. Like it's like a polarizing figure where it's like, you may succeed in a lot of ways, you may get everything you want, you may become the most powerful person, but there's like a backstabbing betrayal vibe where it's like the people that are supposed to love you hate you, or like you are betrayed by people around you. And so like Bukele also has this placement. I'm just curious, kind of like, I don't know, actually, what is like the like opinion of Bukele in El Salvador?
Yeah, I'm gonna tell you now, but I didn't want to influence or anything.
Yeah, sorry, I'm like just going off.
No, go ahead. No, but that was the thing. Yeah, so right now it's my perspective, because you know that it depends your circle and everything. What I know, because right now the person that I have closer are my parents, so we discuss probably every single day about things in general. But the perspective about Bukele is that 90% of the people are really satisfied. Salvadorians, I'm talking about Salvadorians.
Yeah.
Are very pretty satisfied with him. However, I think people think that it's not enough. I mean, we were the most dangerous country in the world. Now we're probably the safest one in Latin America.
Mm-hmm.
But and people are really satisfied. They're happy because we're finally free. But I think right now people are like, all right, we're free, but now is our time to develop, to build. We need more, in terms that we're still are a developing country, so we need more resources. There's a lot of poverty, you know. So I think that's the opinion of the population, that we're in the right place. It's not enough, but we're grateful for Bukele, and we don't have anything against him. I think most hate come from Bitcoiners, and I'm sorry guys, but I think that's the thing, because all the thing related to the IMF. But for me, it's noise, because I know what our country really needs right now. So that's the general opinion. So I think that he's very popular, but still is like kind of what you mentioned about Trump, that people are very, if you ask any Salvadorian, probably they will tell you that no, we're happy about him. But some of them will tell you like, it's not enough. Or for example, one of my closest friends, that is not the one that I told you, she doesn't like Bukele, and I ask her, because he's been like a authoritarian, but she recognized that all the things that have done were so good. So those are the type of opinions that people have around him.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is like, that's the opinion that I mean, granted, I live in the Bay Area of California, right? So there's like a specific like political kind of opinion that you get here pretty often. But usually from people who know him, because obviously Bitcoiners know him, but then in general, mm-hmm. you know, Americans are very, generally speaking, ignorant to international politics at all. But the people that I know that do know him, it's interesting. Mm-hmm. They have such like, they're like, oh, he's so authoritarian. You know, like, how could he do this? You know, how could he round up all these people and all this kind of stuff? And I feel like in general, there's like a, I don't know, I'm always intrigued by like Central America and like Latin America, because I feel like there's such extremes politically, you know, like from like authoritarianism and like communism. True. And then like anarcho-capitalism, like you get everything.
Yeah.
And I feel like Bukele is an interesting example of someone who's kind of combining, you know, he's embodying like both of those archetypes in a way, right? Mm-hmm. Like he's embracing something like Bitcoin and kind of being like, you know, let's go do this in this kind of capitalist sort of way. But mm-hmm. then he's also embracing authoritarianism. And I think like that's something that I think we're increasingly going to see. I mean, this is not an astrology prediction, although I could give an astrological reason for it. But like, I think we're increasingly going to see leaders like that, where it's like, and that is, you know, what I'm talking about with like the Leo archetype of like the strong leader is like, there's almost like a, like, it's very easy for them to abuse their power because like they just have it innately, you know, and like, there's almost no one who can challenge them. And I think that's like a similarity between Trump and Bukele, and like astrologically, I would say is also a similarity with them. I'm so curious now. I'm like looking at his chart. I'm like, is there a downfall coming? Like,
actually, I just remind. Oh, sorry to interrupt.
No, go on.
I just remind one thing that my dad told me when the first time that we voted for Bukele, but not as a mayor, but as a president. No, it wasn't there. It wasn't like. Ah, no, it was on the second election, because I had to vote here in Europe, and he voted in El Salvador. And he told me that, you know, the difference that right now is happening with Bukele? And I remember exactly this, because it was like, I never thought about this. And he told me, like, what happened, the success on Bukele is that he is very popular, but he's also accepted, which normally doesn't happen, both things, with presidents. For example, you know, let's say Putin, he's very popular. But internationally, he's not very accepted. Probably in Russia, it is. The same for Donald Trump. He's very popular, but it's not accepted with everyone. But in the case of Bukele, he's very popular and he's very accepted. So that's why.
Yeah,
so that's the vector.
When did Bukele come into power?
The first time or the second time?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know enough about the history to. But I guess like the El Salvador Bitcoin stuff was 2021. We said that earlier.
Let me check. Really quick, I can find out.
I'm curious because so Bukele has he has Jupiter and Saturn conjunct in his natal chart, which like when I was talking about the thing that got me into Bitcoin back in the end of 2020 was Saturn and Jupiter conjunct at the beginning of Aquarius. And so Bukele has that he has it in Libra, which was, oh my gosh, there's like so much like weird technical details I could get into. But basically, for the next 200 years, all of the Saturn-Jupiter conjunctions are happening in air signs. The air signs are Aquarius, Libra, and Gemini. All
right.
And previously, the last 200 years, all of the conjunctions have happened in earth signs. And so like astrologers often think of this as like we're transitioning from an age that was dominated by growth and structures being built around resources and like things that are more related to the earth and like physical kind of things, to now we're going into technological developments where all of the, because Saturn is structures, so it's like the foundations of something, so it makes things actually happen, like it puts the hard work in. And then Jupiter is growth, optimism, abundance. And so when you have those two things aligned, it's like you actually have the power to do something, right? And so Bukele was born at the, I mean, literally exactly. That's crazy. Yeah, he literally must have been born the exact day. I'm like, not even, it's like by the minute, not by the minute, by the minute astrologically, not by the minute, like time-wise, because I'm just looking at the degrees, but it's literally like they were exactly conjunct. So literally he was born at the exact conjunction of the first Saturn-Jupiter conjunction that happened in air signs.
So can you share me that map after to attach to the box while you're talking?
Yeah, it's 1981. He was born 1981, July 24th. That's so interesting. So basically Bukele, like, if I can kind of distill all that, is like because your natal chart is like the energy that you have, right? It's like what you're imprinted with. So at the time that he was born, his natal chart is imprinted with this like optimism and also hard work of that goes into growing these structures of like, it's primarily focused on technology and information because now we're entering the age of air and that's what air deals with. But like he basically has that in him, like he has that power in him. And then also like when we had that Saturn Jupiter conjunction at the end of 2020, you know, that's like right around the time that like El Salvador adopts Bitcoin and he kind of embraces that. So it's like I can understand why from his natal astrology, I mean, A, he gets Donald Trump, right? I talked about that before. They have a lot of similarities. Mm-hmm. But then B, like he understands new technology. Like he understands the era that we're entering into. So I'm curious actually to see, you know, you said people are kind of maybe some people are thinking it's like not enough that he's done for El Salvador. I'm curious if the things that he does moving forward will be more focused on developing El Salvador from like a kind of new technology perspective. Like think about somewhere like Singapore, right? That's like mm-hmm. become more of like a hub for the future in a way. Like it's like Singapore went from being like a swamp basically to now being like one of the most futuristic cities on the planet. Like I'm curious to see if that's the kind of direction that Bukele takes El Salvador, just based on like the, like he has that kind of potential in his chart. It's honestly an incredible chart. Like I'm shocked. I've never looked at this before. It's just like crazy.
Yeah. So I'm gonna give you two information. The first one is that yes. probably yeah, because we have the National Bitcoin Office, but right now we develop. The first AI national AI office. So it's kind mm-hmm. they work mm-hmm. hand in hand with the Bitcoin office, but yeah, they're introducing some laws, and the idea to them is to work with, for example, NVIDIA with the latest. I think they're going to develop one of the most powerful chip with NVIDIA, and will integrate AI, and somehow it will work in El Salvador, but I don't have much information about that yet. Mm-hmm. But so apparently that's the direction. We will see how it develops, right? But those are come like the
that makes sense they want to me. Yeah.
And the other thing is that I found out when he became president, and it was the 1st of June, 2019.
2000? What? How old was he?
Oh yeah.
Wait, what year?
Yeah.
2000?
2019.
How old? Oh, 2019. I thought you said the year 2000. I was like,
No.
Like 15?
No. Sorry.
2019. Okay, June of 2019. Yeah. Yeah, no, it was, it's interesting. And then did he adopt
his young.
Like, yes, he is very young. Yeah. And like also good looking. I think it's like, I'm like, good for him for being a world leader who's young and good looking. We need more of those, you know? Like, it's like,
he's not bald or anything.
Yeah, it's too geriatric. There's too many old people, you know? No, that's interesting. Yeah, now I'm like, oh, maybe I'll do a whole like investigation of Bukele's astrology.
Sure, that's why I brought that.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing this to my attention, because I really never would have known. Like, this is pretty, yeah, very powerful chart in general. Like, honestly, very impressive. A lot of leadership energy.
Yeah, because when I was listening to your episode with Danny, I was really curious about everything that you got. I don't know how much probably you have work regarding Donald Trump, but I was very fascinated. I was like, what if we do the same exercise with Bukele? Probably she hasn't done that.
Totally.
I mean,
I focus on the U.S. obviously because I'm from the U.S. I live in the U.S.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's cool to be able to, I mean, like, you know, because I told you I'm into like kind of political, economic, civilizational astrology.
Absolutely.
Like getting exact birth times can be really hard. Like if I wanted to do the astrology of gold, it's like gold's an element, you know, like there's no like, you know, I could look at maybe like a major institution or a specific act that happened, a political mm-hmm. law that was passed, but there's not really like that much to work with. And so like generally with Bitcoin and then with people, you know, with strong leaders, like, you know, if you mm-hmm. think about Bukele as like, you wouldn't have El Salvador as it is in 2025 without Bukele, right? So it's like, yes, you can look at the astrology of El Salvador and you can kind of like derive things from that. But it's like Bukele is such a dynamic figure in El Salvador that it's like you can look at his chart and kind of then look at El Salvador as like a, you can do the astrology that way as well. But it's like you don't always have a strong leader, or like you don't always have like a birth time in that way, because like mm-hmm. if it's, you know, like if I want to do the astrology of like the deep state, you know, it's like, what does that even mean? Like, it's like it ends up being, it's interesting when you have to look at things through the lens of astrology, and you have to get those like birth times and exact, like, you know, essentially time data, like it ends up constricting the way that you can look at problems in interesting ways. And so that's why, like, I like looking at people like Donald Trump or like Bukele in this instance, because they're such like strong players, you know, that it's like what they do and the astrology of them as a person influences the rest of the world. Whereas like, so for example, when I was looking at the 2024 US presidential election, there mm-hmm. were all of these astrologers that were like, well, you know, Kamala is going through some really nice transits on election day, and so I think mm-hmm. she's going to win. And I was like, no, there's no way. Like, this election is not about Kamala. Like, that's not, like, she's going through nice transits because, like, oh my God, she's probably so relieved that she gets to just, like, go back to her house and not have to, like, do all this anymore. You know what I mean? Like, she just, she was never really representative of what was happening in that election. You know what I mean? Yeah. She was kind of just like a stand-in. And so, like, but Trump, of course, like, the election was about Trump, you know? And so, like, I always kind of try to, like, figure out, like, when I'm looking at something like an election, or I'm looking at, like, the future of an industry or a company or whatever, I always like to figure out, like, who are the actual players, you know, and how can I, like, get the astrological data for those. So anyway, thank you for tipping me off to Bukele, because it's, like, super interesting.
No, to you.
Honestly, I predict lots of success for him. Like,
hopefully.
What I want to look for next is I want to see, like, pain points. Like, I want to see, like, what are upcoming dates where, like, he's going to be challenged or he might have a big success. Like, I think that would be really interesting to try to track out. So I'll get back to you on that. Yeah.
Fun. Keep an eye on these dates.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So hold on. Before I continue on telling my birthday, I want to do this game with you that my previous guest have a question for my next guest. Mm-hmm. Guys, you already know how it works. So my previous guest, let me check if I can find the video. Otherwise, I will read it. But hold on. I need to find it. Question. This question was, my previous guest was Tanya Beckley. You know her. She is all into Tanya Beckley. She will kill me because she is from Germany. She's been living in Argentina and she's all on Nestor. So she's pretty cool. She knows a lot about Nestor. She's not technical, but yeah, we made a pretty good episode talking about Nestor.
Yeah. Do you want me to, were you going to come in with your birthday for me to look at your chart? Say, because I can pull that up now too, then, if you're doing third. Oh, that's, oh my gosh, you're the exact opposite of me. I'm August 3rd, which means our suns are exactly opposite.
Let's say waking up tomorrow and the entire world is orange pilled and on Nostar, what's the first thing you would do?
That I would do?
Yeah, if right now we are in the Bitcoin hyper-Bitcoinization.
I'm in my perfect hyper-Bitcoinization world and everyone's on Nostar. That's part of the hyper-Bitcoinization world. I'd probably, like, I mean, I think at that point, if the whole world's on Bitcoin, I'm probably, like, living in a mansion somewhere beautiful, you know, I'm like an early adopter to this, like, global technology. So honestly, I think I'd probably just, like, I'd just be chilling. I'd probably just be doing my astrology predictions as usual. Maybe I'd be, what is it called when you post on Nostr? Like, what's the, is it just posting? But there's isn't there a word for something? Like, you can zap stuff, right? Like, you can zap.
No, but zap is when you, yeah, you can zap sets, and I think there are notes. I think there are notes.
Okay, so maybe I'd post my, you know, I'd say, hey, here's the chart of Bukele. Here's my upcoming date. I'd post my note on Nostr, and everyone would zap me sats. You know, maybe that would be my hyper-Bitcoinization Nostr future.
All right, that's cool. That's awesome.
So kind of what I'm doing already.
By the way, pro tip, now that you also are a producer and a podcaster, do you know that Nostr have their own studio where you can upload it on Primal Studio? I just find out recently.
No, I didn't know that. Because I thought you couldn't upload video.
That's what I thought.
Nostr. Yeah.
That's what I thought.
But you can now.
Because you can now. Because normally I post, I don't know, because before having this information, I was just trying to post my podcast in a very low quality. And sometimes it uploads, sometimes it doesn't. But after talking with Tanya, she told me that, and guys, if it is helpful, you can go to Primal Studio and you can upload there. But not just videos, you can do like blogs and everything, and they will zap you. So if you want to try, upload episodes.
Okay, I actually, you know how it goes. I'm curious because
I'll share with you
to YouTube, Spotify, X, whatever, and it's, you know, different quirks for everything.
Exactly.
So yeah,
actually,
how it goes.
Actually, yesterday was the episode with Tanya. So now you know we are recording these guys.
Nice.
But yeah, I actually uploaded and it was quite easy. So I was really fascinated. So I'll let you know. Yeah, okay. You do know about ordinals.
Yeah,
how much do you know?
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna close with that.
Yeah. You're like,
I didn't have this information, but now it's super cool. Because I'll let you know when we finish the podcast why I'm laughing.
Yeah.
All right. So it's almost
curious to hear their answer.
It's, yeah. So we're having an hour. I don't know how much time do you have, but.
Oh, we can. I just want to look at your chart a little bit. You know, we can just do a little whatever here and there.
30 minutes or less, because I don't want to abuse for your time. But yeah, if you want to do it, now you have my birthday.
I mean, really, I just wanted to point. So I pulled up your chart. First of all, by the way, our suns are exactly opposite. Like my half birthday is February 3rd. My birthday is August 3rd. So like we're exactly opposite.
Wow.
So you're an Aquarius. I'm a Leo. These are opposite signs. So the Leo Aquarius axis in general, all the signs that are opposite of each other, they deal with the same theme, but they deal with it in different ways. So Leo, as I said before, is this like king, right? It's all about ego. It's all about like, I'm the leader, I'm the ruler. You know, it's like very ego centered in a lot of ways. It's like a negative depiction of Leos. They can be great, but like that's the stereotype of the Leo. And Aquarius also deals with ego. Aquarius, like that's their theme as well. But the way that Aquarius deals with it is by being like, okay, you know, I am my own main character of my movie, of my show, whatever. But I recognize that you're also a person who's also a main character of your own show. And so I want to be able to be myself and not have to compromise for you being yourself. And I want to figure out how we work together or how we don't work together if it doesn't work. And so that's Aquarius's version of ego, is like, it's about maintaining your sovereignty, essentially. And so that's, again, you know, when we talk about Bitcoin, like that's why I'm like, so like, oh, Bitcoin is this sort of Aquarian technology. It's because it's about maintaining individuality. And that's like a very important thing to Aquariuses in general, is they like have to be themselves, but they're not trying to like dominate over everyone else. They're not trying to like make everyone else's lives about them. It's just, they need to have their own individuality. And so Aquariuses, if they can be higher evolved as people, they can have like a much more mature perspective on ego than Leos do. Leos are kind of childlike about ego, which is kind of cute in a lot of ways. It like, it makes them very creative. It makes them good at leadership because they can take decisive action and they can go for things. But Aquariuses are like a more mature version of ego, where they recognize that like, it's not all about them, even though their life is all about them and they want to be an individual. Not everyone's life is all about them. So you're an Aquarius. You have actually quite a few planets in Aquarius. So in general, like you have a lot of synastry with Bitcoin, like from that network sort of Aquarian technology kind of perspective.
Interesting.
You're also a quintessential millennial because you were born with Neptune and Uranus conjunct, which is like the like end millennial placement, in my opinion. That's like the disillusionment I was talking about with like religion and like former ways of being, where the generations before us, like our parents are like, well, you need to go to school and do this and get this job and buy this house and whatever, and this is how you live a good life. People with this conjunction, which you have, are like, they're like, actually, that doesn't work anymore. Actually, you're more like, I'm going to make my own morals. I can't like follow that. That system doesn't work anymore. That's like a very quintessential end of the millennial generation placement that you have like exactly in your chart.
Sorry, that's why I'm doing this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, now I'm a Bitcoin podcaster. Like, sorry. Yeah, you also have Cancer Moon. I love that because Cancer is the ruler of the moon. So it's like the moon is the emotional world. It's the inner world. So you've got like a good emotional world. The problem with Cancer energy for men is that it's very difficult to feel all of the emotions without like wanting to either shut them off and like not feel them or like go way overboard. So that's really the challenge, is like, The sign of Cancer, which is the ruler of the moon, the ruler of the emotional world, which you have your moon in Cancer, is like the mother of the zodiac. So it's like a feminine sort of maternal kind of energy. And that can be very difficult for men to deal with and to know how to like exist with. So I feel like, especially with an Aquarius sun, Aquariuses are very intellectual. They're very like rational in a lot of ways. There's probably an inclination to like rationalize your feelings or sort of like compartmentalize them in a way that's just not, that's not how you feel. You feel like in an intuitive way. And so you have to find a way to kind of embrace that intuitiveness without just like trying to either shut it down or like, because it'll overcome. Like if you try to shut it down, if you try to just be rational about your emotions will take over. So that's really the challenge for Cancer Moon's placement. It's a lot of emotional depth. There's like a very rich inner world there as well.
I'm very emotional.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Like that's the challenge. It's just like figuring out how to be in touch with your emotions and not like just freak out about it, basically. There's more I could say, but also you need to love your job. Like just generally speaking, you have to love your job. That's like, there's no option for you. So you got to figure
that out. So far, I love my job.
Figure that out. Okay, good. Yeah, you have to love your job. That's definitely a big part of the career for you. Yeah, and just a lot of Aquarius placements in general. A lot of that's your main synastry with Bitcoin, is like the futuristic network, kind of the way that we connect all around the world, and we all like don't compromise ourselves for our financial system and create a financial system that like takes the worst parts of us and makes it into a trustless system. That's like the part of Bitcoin that you connect with the most. So yeah, you're a very Aquarius person in general.
Very Aquarius, being Aquarius.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, it was really nice. Thank you very much.
Yeah, totally. My partner, you know.
Yeah, now you have another Bitcoiner in your list.
Yes, exactly. My data archive is crazy.
That's awesome. Cool. We're gonna start kind of wrap it up. I still have a few questions, but we're gonna start closing up about it. But yeah, I also tell you that one of my very best friends also have a question for you. Many people have a question for you, but guys, I need to focus. But I'm gonna let us slide this one. So she actually asked me, and I don't know if it is kind of Bitcoin related somehow, but she wants to know that she works at, I will tell you that she works somehow with electricity and grids and energy and the 2030 agenda here in Europe regarding the climate change and everything. So her question is literally, when we will get the zero carbon climate change finally?
That's an interesting question. So I think this goes back a little bit to what I was saying about when I mentioned like that for the last 200 years, all of the Saturn Jupiter conjunctions have been in earth signs, and now we're moving into air signs. And so the last 200 years, all of the growth and expansion that we've been able to do, where like, you know, we have an idea for something that's like very optimistic and interesting, and then we can like build the foundations for it. That's what like Saturn and Jupiter together can create. All of that has happened in the earth realm, which is like material world, natural resources, like physically building stuff. That was basically the last 200 years. And now we're in this 200 year period where all of that innovation comes in more information and technology. And so I think the struggle that we have basically is that we can't completely leave the natural world. Like the physical world is always going to be a big part of our existence. It's not like we're going to download our consciousness to the cloud and start living in the internet, or, you know, like we have bodies. I don't think our bodies are going away anytime soon. Maybe I'm wrong. Yeah. That's what I think. And so I think the challenge that we have right now is, I think we're at the end of an era where we've been able to really come up with a lot of interesting, innovative, like innovations basically around physical reality. And now we're moving into a realm that's a lot more focused on technology and is a lot more focused on the digital realm. And so I think the challenge that we basically have right now is like, we're focusing so much of our brain power, so much of our economic resources, like even energy, right? Like think about Bitcoin or training AI models. We're focusing so much on technology. And so I think that the challenge that we have is like, how do we figure out how to encourage that innovation? Because that innovation is like the time that we're in, you know, it's like you can't stop progress, while also recognizing that like there's a fundamental foundation of physical reality that we have to like make sure works and come up with interesting solutions for. And so I feel like the difficult thing is like we kind of need to lean into digital reality, not digital reality like, oh, we need to, you know, we're not like downloading ourselves or putting on VR headsets or whatever, but just technological solutions like Bitcoin, right? Where Bitcoin does a great job of having a connection to physical reality through its energy expenditure, while being very much a technology of the internet. You know, it's a technology. It's not a physical thing. There's no like physical Bitcoin that you could pick up and hold in your hand. And so I think like in terms of when, like, you know, I don't know if we're going to reach a like carbon neutral. Like, I think it's almost like we're not innovating in that side of things anymore. It's more that I think we're going to have to figure out how to balance the extreme demand for like a digital focused society with the physical constraints of real life. And so I don't know, like I'm not sure that, like, it's maybe a little bit of a doomer take, but like I don't actually know if we will reach this point where like we've figured out how to harness all this energy from the sun and how to like live carbon neutral. Like we might not we might not have like a lot more innovations on that front. It might mm-hmm. just be a reordering of the way that we live in a certain way that will, you know, maybe that's people being more on the computer than being outside traveling, for example. Like, I'm not saying that's a good thing, but like, these are the kind of things that I think about in terms of like, just, we might just start living a much more downward looking into our screens type of life and figuring out how to balance that with physical reality. So I don't know, there's not really a date that I have, but I think that's kind of like the energy shift that we're seeing happening right now is the focus away from natural resources and earth-centered things to information, technology, all those kind of like air information type innovations.
Interesting.
So hopefully it's not too doomer.
No, I think not. Actually, it's a really honest and great answer. So yeah. You mentioned also about ordinals. I'm gonna be honest, I never talk about ordinals in the podcast, but not guys. Hold on. It's not because I hate it. I don't hate it. I just don't know. I mean, I gotta be honest, I have some Bitcoiners that are into ordinals that normally we have Bitcoin meetups, but are personal friends, so we hang out and they always talk about ordinals.
Oh, really? That's funny.
I'll pass the contact because probably you will have a lot of things to talk about.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and so they always talk about that, but honestly, I never get it. And for people that probably are hearing this in the podcast for the first time, you can explain a little bit about that, because probably it will be a great way to go into end the podcast, to leave a cliffhanger and then another people to talk about that. And why it's so fascinating between Bitcoin. Hold on, three questions. One, what is it? Then why so fascinating? And why there's so much hate and love between Bitcoiners? Mm-hmm. Because I think it's just like astrology and astronomy, like it's love or hate, right?
Totally. Yes, absolutely. So ordinals, you know, on a very basic level, I think ordinals is just like a natural property of Bitcoin. All it is it's just numbering Satoshis based on, you know, from my astrological perspective, it's like their birth time, right? It's like you have the first block that's mined, mm-hmm. that mines the first 50 Bitcoin. That first sat in that first block is sat zero. Then you have 1, 2, 3, da, 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 you know, all the way up to 2.1 quadrillion, however many sats mm-hmm. that we will have by 2140. So mm-hmm. ordinals, and then you can track that, right? So you can take if I send you a transaction, we can then like track the ordinal back through transactions to figure out when was it mined and then give it an ordinal number. So it essentially just gives a tracking number or just like a numeric, like, order of birth basically number mm-hmm. to every Satoshi. That's all ordinals is, like, just ordinal inscriptions are another thing. That's all ordinals is. And so from my perspective, ordinals is just a natural property of Bitcoin that anyone could have discovered. And in fact, like, people did discover it before Casey Rodemore, who's my podcast co-host, who like kind of invented ordinals or coined that name. There was actually, I think his name's Johnson Lau, something like that. He's a Bitcoin core dev who talked about a very similar algorithm back in 2012 on the Bitcoin Talk forum. So this is like an idea for just, like, it's honestly just, it's, I think it's, again, it's a natural property of Bitcoin. It's just something that it's a way you can look at Bitcoin. So then inscriptions are kind of a totally separate
idea. Hold on. Just tell me that Casey is your co-host?
Yes. Yeah, that's why I'm in ordinals, because it's like I got stuck
in the
world, but I also love ordinals.
I don't know how you told me twice and I didn't get that, because my friend actually told me that you should interview him. So, all right, so we'll have to talk later.
He's great. So, and as I said before, he's like, he is one of the most technical Bitcoiners I've ever, he loves Bitcoin so much. He knows it so well. Like, I think ordinals is like a love letter to Bitcoin, to be honest. It's just like it's something that he kind of discovered in Bitcoin, basically. And again, wasn't even the first to discover it. Like, it's other people have kind of had this idea in different versions before. So that's all ordinals is. Then inscriptions is basically putting arbitrary data, you know, in a lot of people's cases, if they're looking at it from like an NFT perspective, it's like putting a JPEG or an image or whatever, putting mm-hmm. arbitrary data into a Bitcoin transaction. And then just putting that on the Bitcoin blockchain, because everything that you put in a Bitcoin transaction is on the blockchain and everyone has to download it in its entirety in order to run Bitcoin, right? So like, Satoshi literally did that in the first Bitcoin block, right? January 3rd, 2009, Chancellor on the brink of second bailout for banks. Like, that in some ways you can think of as like an inscription, or just he's putting a message onto Bitcoin, like you're you know, you're making a mark on the pyramids of Giza or something, right? Like it's, you're just making a mark on a mech
structure. Like a signature? Somehow?
Yeah. I mean, signatures are also there, but even just like.
Oh, so that's something different as well.
Yes, well, a signature is what signs the transaction to like verify like you are sending the Bitcoin.
Yeah, right? True. Yeah,
but a signature like, you know, Aaron loves blah, blah, blah in a heart, like something like that. You know what I mean? Like just a message, right? You can put anything. And so that's what inscribing is. Inscribing is just putting arbitrary data, whatever you want, into a Bitcoin transaction. And then the way that it connects to ordinals and why ordinals ends up being kind of inscriptions and ordinals are thought of basically as the same thing is that if you then have a tracker where I'm sending this arbitrary data, an image of my cat or whatever, I'm putting this cat in this transaction and I'm sending it to you. And we're going to say that that cat image is inscribed and the tracker on it is the first ordinal in that transaction. And so then we can send that ordinal around and that's always referencing that image that's stored on Bitcoin. And so basically the connection between ordinals and inscriptions is just, okay, we've always been able to put arbitrary data on Bitcoin. That's always been true. We've been doing it since the first block of Bitcoin with Satoshi. But now we have this sat that we can then attach basically to that content. And then when we transfer that sat around, we can use that as an identifier for the content that's stored on Bitcoin. And so that's where like the NFT side of it kind of came into and from my perspective, it's just like people running back the NFT narrative. Like they're like, oh my gosh, now let's make a 10K monkey JPEG collection. You know, it's like they're just running back narratives like over and over and over again. But what I like about it is, I guess you asked like, why is it fascinating? I think that was question two. I don't remember what question three is now, but.
No. Why love it so much? Because I feel it, right? that. It's very polarized. At least that's a much better press.
Yeah. So I think, why I love it, why I think it's really interesting is, so I think, you know, from this Age of Aquarius perspective on Bitcoin, where Bitcoin is this like really important thing for the digital age, which by the way, the Age of Aquarius is 2000 years long. Like it's a long, think on that time scale, you know, think on the scale of the pyramid.
Is that a good thing for me?
Or Stonehenge. Yeah, it's a good thing. It's a good thing. You know, this age is about you in a way. but like, you know, I think of Bitcoin as basically being this extremely robust structure in digital reality. And digital reality is something that we're just starting to build out, you know, like we don't know, like it's very hard to understand the architecture of like the digital realm because it's kind of has its own laws, its own rules. Like it's not like the physical realm in a lot of ways, right? And so, you know, one of the things with digital reality is like there's almost like so much information that you kind of can't even preserve it. Like if you try to go back to a website page that you went to 10 years ago, it's probably not even there, you know? Like the internet is very ephemeral in a lot of ways. And so if you want to preserve information or you want to preserve data or you want to make a great piece of art or whatever it is and like have it last in digital reality, I think putting it on Bitcoin would be a really smart way to do it because you have to download Bitcoin in its entirety in order to mine Bitcoin and to run Bitcoin, to run a node, right? And so you have basically this extremely extensive document of economic and financial transactions, yes, but also now there's like cultural data with inscriptions where like it's now replicated all over the world and everyone who runs Bitcoin has to download it. And so it's like, it's better file storage than IPFS in my opinion. Like it's the best form of like basically decentralized file storage. And so I look at it from this perspective of like, what is like the data that's important to preserve? So for example, when ordinals took off, it took 1 week for someone to inscribe the Bible. Like, of course, you know, because that's an obvious thing to preserve, right? And so there's a lot of people who have used it from that perspective of like, okay, I want to put this data onto Bitcoin so that people know that this existed. It's the Library of Alexandria that can't be burned, basically, right? It's like we have this archive available to
us.
And currently sats, like it's like one sat per V-byte for transactions or something, right? Like it's cheap right now to like put whatever you want. And so of course, a lot of the narrative is dominated by NFT stuff because it brought a lot of like crypto people back into Bitcoin. But whenever there's world events, if you go to ordinals.com, which just shows what's being inscribed like at any given time, if you go to ordinals.com during any major event, you will see people inscribing like history. So for example, when the Trump mugshot came out, that was inscribed instantly, like 10 people inscribed the Trump mugshot, you know, and like that's an archaeological record, like if you want to think about it that way. Or when Trump tweeted, you know, I am giving a full pardon to Ross Ulbricht, Like I inscribed that instantly, and there were five other people who inscribed that alongside with me. And so like, and some of them just inscribed free Ross artwork. Like some of them didn't inscribe that tweet. They inscribed their own sort of interpretation of it in a way, you know? And so the way that I think about ordinals and inscriptions is like, we basically are creating a primary source document of the internet. You know, we're creating an archaeological record of our time right now that has like so much interesting data from the perspective of economics, but also cultural now. And so like, that's what's so exciting to me about it. And I understand how like people don't necessarily see it that way if they just see like a bunch of ugly 10K NFT collections, right? Like they're like, oh, who cares?
Probably the hate comes from there, from the end.
Yeah, I think really it's like, it's two things. It's like, it's that Bitcoiners hate crypto people, which I understand, but also like, crypto people are more similar to you than like no coiners. You know what I mean? Like, it's easy to kind of be like, I hate these shit coiners or whatever. But it's like, I know so many people who did not know the fiat narrative until ordinals, like crypto people that have been in crypto since 2017. A lot of them are young people. They're like gamers or like, they're like super online kind of like kids, basically. Right. They got into crypto because they're just really online. They didn't get into it from like a Bitcoin, like fiat perspective. And then ordinals is the first time they ever owned Bitcoin at all. And now they're Bitcoin maxis or like, you know, they're not a part of that group because that's like its own group, but they're orange pilled, right? Like they're into Bitcoin for real now. And so it's like, you know, if you want to just like hate on crypto people because you think they're all scammers or shitcoiners or whatever, it's like, well, you're not really reaching the olive branch for people that are in a lot of ways very primed to become Bitcoiners. You know, they already are used to using crypto. They're already used to like the, you know, like if you try to get your grandma to use Bitcoin, it's like there's so many hurdles to overcome, right?
Yeah.
But if you try to get a 22-year-old crypto guy to use Bitcoin, like the main hurdle is that they just don't understand why it's valuable. Like they already have the technical know-how. So it's like, yeah, to me, it's just brought in a wave of crypto people back to Bitcoin or to Bitcoin for the first time that I think just Bitcoiners in general have such an antagonism to because they just hate crypto in general. So there's that. And then also the fees are very scary to a lot of Bitcoin companies because there's a lot of Bitcoin companies whose business models rely on low fees in order to keep their business model going. And so I think there's also quite a bit of a moral like satanic panic type of stuff that was flamed up by people who really just like didn't have good business interests for a high fee environments, which by the way, we have to have a high fee environment for Bitcoin to succeed. So yeah, it was kind of shocking when it took off that it was so polarizing, but I don't know. It is in many ways like a very groundbreaking thing. Like if you think about it from the perspective of 100 years from now, someone using it as an archaeological record, like that's a very powerful thing. So maybe there's just something innate in that that's going to like make people feel some type of way. But I don't know. I think the correct response is either to like love it or not care. Those are like the two things that seem to make sense to me. I think hating it is like, why? You know, you can hate pieces of art, but do you hate art? You know, like you can hate movies, like a certain movie, but do you hate movies? Like that's crazy. So that's kind of my perspective on it is it's just a medium, you know, it's a medium of delivering a message or preserving a message. So if you don't want to do it, you're not interested, that's totally fine, but it's a cool tool.
Yeah, all right. I didn't see it that way, but you have opened me a new perspective on way to seeing it, so
I'm glad.
Erin, wow, I mean it has been more than an hour. I think that we can keep talking for a long time, but yeah
thanks for having me, this is great.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, probably we'll do a second episode later.
Yeah, but we can follow up after some stuff has happened, do some astrological predictions. Yeah.
Exactly. But yeah, thank you very much for coming to the podcast. It was really interesting, really amazing. And yeah, guys, I'll post in the podcast notes your links. You need to send it to me. I'll listen also to Erin's podcast. And yeah, see you on the next week. Ciao.
Bye.